we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Well, it seems like once again, we're repeating history, not from hundreds of years ago, but from just a few months ago, when a couple of years ago, we are repeating the same unbelievable errors. That is the goal, to keep us controlled. What I'm referring to is the masking. They are bringing it back, and more evidence that they believe, I don't know if they actually believe it, but that they are supporting more masking, more seclusion, more bitterness, more separation, more damage and death. They've done a good job of doing with COVID of that the past 3 years, and so it looks like they're doubling down again. I am Dr. Stuart Tankersley and Jordan Vaughn. Jordan, what's the latest way they're trying to get us to do it?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, the day after the election, I'm sure the New England Journal doesn't monitor the election results here, Stuart, but the New England Journal of Medicine drops a interesting study that, again, goes back and wants to fight a battle that we thought had been won, and that battle being that mask in general, especially in the context of children, do not actually have much, if at all, no benefit. In fact, I would argue they don't, but they actually have harm. And I guess to me, that was the biggest argument I had over a year ago when I said, let's just stipulate that masks work. I don't believe they do, but even if they do, I would argue that we don't know the consequences. Well, now we do know the consequences. And so the reality is that even in the context of them working, the consequences themselves are negative. And those negative consequences appear to be developmental, educational, and really kind of lifetime affecting. But leave it to the New England Journal to bring along a study that, at least at this point, has been probably one of the most embarrassing studies for the New England Journal to drop. And it's because a lot of what is in this study is not even, I mean, probably wouldn't pass peer review if somebody didn't have an ideological bent as a peer reviewer, because of the big fallacies in it, just starting from how they selected groups. But I will attach that in the podcast, some analysis of it. But one of the biggest things was, interestingly enough, again, this looked at two kind of school districts, one mandating mask, one not. But interestingly enough, the schools had different rules on when and who to be tested. And interestingly enough, the masked school, for instance, they did not require them to be tested when they were sick, because they assumed, given that they were masked when they were sick, they did not have COVID. And so that in itself makes it very hard to compare these two groups. And actually, one of my favorite really epidemiologists / doctors, Tracy Hoag, who's been a big part of analyzing a lot of the myocarditis data in the vaccines, kind of breaks that down. And I'll attach that. But this, again, is how medicine, when it's corrupted, allows ideological, or what I would call political, players to push through their political bents with the guise of what we would call an appeal to authority, or, you know, again, the old adage that isn't, we've talked about before, follow the science. You can't follow science because it's not a leader, it's an informer. But this is a way to basically provide what I would say protection from really persecution of the political elites that want to reinstate things that have no scientific backing. And so I would.
I would contend with one thing, and that is they want to contend with these scientists, quote unquote, who are promoting not just ineffective, but harmful policies and agents. It's clear that the vaccines, as they are called, are injurious. It is clear that masks are injurious, especially in children. And how they get away with it, and I think it's kind of funny that in that article they were talking about the actual distinct demographics of the groups of children in the in Boston, I think. There were dramatic differences in their living conditions and their socioeconomic status. And none of that matters. Isn't that convenient? These people, they've destroyed so much with their absolute rejection of truth, with a capital T, that they're blinded to the to their little simple study that shows to them, according to them, in this study, socioeconomics doesn't matter. Just so long as our agenda is followed, socioeconomics doesn't matter. Now, we know that their ultimate policies do hurt the poor the most.
Interestingly enough, in this paper, they go on to say that actual structural racism is embedded in public policies and that policy decisions have the potential to rectify or reproduce health inequities. So the authors are framing masks as a tool to lower structural racism. Can you believe that? So what we need to do is mask, you know, everybody to make it, you know, and basically
equitable.
Exactly. Yeah. So if masks slow COVID-19 and improve long-term outcomes, then they might help minority kids more than the majority kids. But if masks don't actually improve long-term outcomes because all kids get COVID anyway, or because masks don't slow spread, then masking kids disproportionately hurts poor minority kids. This study actually shows American society was happy to mask minority kids longer. And that's, again, goes back to the fact that even though they're saying it's to health inequities, it's just funny, you know. It says during the pandemic, this is, again, just an analysis by somebody who's an open-minded, just a skeptic of the mask debate. But during the pandemic, poor people had to mask more than rich people, which is true. But let's just make sure that it's mandated because we don't because when we do these, again, when we talk about public policies, people that are on the lowest rung of the ladder are the ones that are most hurt by public policies because they don't have any way around them.
Yeah, I wonder,
so,
you know, they hate so much about what is right and true. They have driven a lot of people away from public schools because of their ridiculous, tyrannical decisions. And now they're driving more and more people to homeschooling or to alternative ways of educating their children, because clearly they failed in educating the poorest children among us. And they don't care, just so long as their little, their big NEA, National Education Association, goes after and gets their money and power. They do not care about our children. It's abundantly evident over the decades that they are not in their best interest is not our children's learning. And so, you know, it's so very, very unfortunate that we do not see what they're doing to medicine, what they've done to medicine the last few decades. So this is a very important article, because they're going to use it, right, once again, to harm the children.
Yeah,
and
if you haven't found the game yet, to all our audience, it is put out a bunch of papers. I mean, they did this even with the origin of the virus. Put out a bunch of papers that basically say a bunch of experts agree on this. And then the politicians or whoever wants to abide by said policy refers to those papers. Now, the papers themselves are then quoted in the media as if they are God's laws. And from that, you have a, I guess what I would call a circle of influence, and circle meaning they all refer to each other, that is unbreakable, because all they do is point back to the other person, who points back to the other person, who eventually comes back to the politician. And we've seen this as their arguments break down as well. You know, this last couple months when Fauci says, "Oh, I had nothing to do with school closures." You know, that was not, I did not decide on school closings. It was officials. Well, guess who the officials used as their onus for school closing?
Themselves.
Fauci. Well, yeah. Fauci did. So again, right. this is how the game works. And well, that's what people have to understand, is when these things drop and then all of a sudden they're blindsided by where did this come from? It came, I mean, it's almost, you know, it's, I guess, conspiratorial to say it's well planned, but it really isn't even at this point conspiracy. It's pretty
no,
obvious.
No, it is conspiracy. It's just no theory.
Yeah.
There is a conspiracy.
Yeah.
it's just not theory, and it hasn't been.
It's not theory. It's reality. But yeah, that's how this works. I mean, you can look at the emails even between the CDC and Big Tech, as well as Fauci and his cohorts. They basically drive a narrative, and that narrative gets backed up by the science that they approve of. And the problem is that's not what science is.
Right. And what is the answer? The answer is not buying into the lies and having courage to stand up to the liars. And our country has revealed itself, as Senator Tuberville told us, to be very fearful. And to overcome fear, you need courage. And we just, it's just unbelievable that the evidence is right before our very eyes that we do not care. Just so long as we get our little comfort, and our little comfort zone gets very, very, very tight to the point that it's strangling all of us. And because they will impose their will until we stand up against it. But that's been their agenda and their conspiracy that they've told us. This isn't just speculation that we are reading the tea leaves. We're listening to what they're telling us. So this is another indication, and it's so important that we not mask our children or separate them from the peers and in classroom teaching. It's just awful. The learning doesn't follow the Zoom meetings. And so it's got to change. These people have got to change. And we need to be
careful.
Always
go back to the, you know, when I talk to people about this kind of issue, I mean, definitely disease in itself, definitely requires interaction for it to be transmitted. The problem is I'm kind of, this is more of a, probably philosophical argument, but for us to even understand disease required us to interact with people. And so the very thing that has given us the ability to learn about disease and actually even find out what causes disease required us to have the small risk of disease passing. And that in itself, it's almost like we're trying to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. It was interaction and cooperation and all the things that God designed us to do as social human beings. Those things have their risk, but the benefit is immense, and for at least all of human interaction has outweighed the risk. Because again, I mean, there are tribes in, you know, parts of Africa or parts of Southeast Asia that don't have any contact with the outside world. And I will ask you, do you think they have a good healthcare system, Stuart?
No, of course not. And I bet that they wouldn't consider destroying it if they did have a very good one.
Exactly. And they probably don't have masks on either, by the way. But
yeah, and they get outside, and it's just so amazing how, once again, we've been saying this from the beginning. America has remained in the top 10 in mortality, infectious mortality rate throughout this whole pandemic. It's just unbelievable that we would tolerate this. And the elections last week are, of course, not an accurate indication of what's the electorate would like, because of the abundant evidence of the thefts, in my view. But pretty close is insanity.
So, Stuart, let's come back after the break, and we will talk about that specifically. I think, actually, that's another example of where science and this fear has changed something on purpose, and that actually has to do with how we vote. But, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. This is America Out Loud Pulse. We will be back.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse. I'm Dr. Stuart Tankersley with Dr. Jordan Vaughn. We are Concerned Doctors, concerneddoctors.org. And thank you for joining us again on America Out Loud Pulse. Jordan? We left off the last segment talking about the masks and their detrimental effects and these people that have been running this masquerading as leaders, but they are really destructive and they won't be held accountable, it looks like, in large measure unless a couple of things happen over the next month. Because last week we had the elections and... It may be, the Lord allows us to have two different, both Republicans in charge of both houses. I am not optimistic that the Republicans will do the right thing. But Senator Ron Johnson certainly will try. It looks like if the Republicans win the Senate, he will be in charge of the most important investigative committee up there in Washington, and he certainly has been on our side with this catastrophe for over a year now. I would say he's the leading congressman, including Ron Paul, that he has had a more in-depth understanding of the and standing up and seeking to investigate the lies and deceptions He is the lead bearer of the truth with COVID. And if he is, if the Republicans win, then he will receive the, he'll be in charge of the most important committee up there. And I'm certainly hopeful that he will, because we have got to get somebody that is willing to stand up to the lies and deceptions and ask the questions like he has been doing. I think he has sent the CDC director, Walensky, almost 50 different letters of inquiry that she has not responded to. A sitting U.S. senator, the way the Constitution's written is, other people in the government are answerable to the Senate. They just don't, they choose not to. And what is his recourse? Because the other senators in charge don't want to know it, obviously, because they're in on the gig. But it's amazing that we have the opportunity. Good Lord willing, we get the victories in both houses. It would be wonderful to be able to stop a lot of this nonsense, hopefully stop a lot of this nonsense. But what's your reading of the tea leaves with all this, Jordan?
Yeah, I'm very fairly, first of all, worried that the Senate, I think, is already lost. But again, it seems like Nevada and Arizona, when we have these delayed votes, it always seems that the one side seems to have the other, always seems to win those outcomes. And it looks like that's probably going to be the case here as well. The one thing that I would point out, and this has been noticed in comparing how people vote to from 2018, 2016 to now 2020 and 2022, the onset of mail-in ballots, the ability to ballot harvest, all the things that have made us really question our voting system, because what we see is on the day of vote, we don't get results for, you know, at this point, it seems like, I guess we don't even have them now. You know, all those ways we've counted, because they've moved voting into something that takes place over, I guess in Pennsylvania, was 39 days before the vote you were allowed to vote. And then you basically don't even know who the candidates are. Arizona is a good example. A candidate had dropped out, you know, after voting had started. So again, you have a libertarian candidate that 50,000 of his votes all of a sudden don't matter. What do you do with those? So people are not only losing or their votes are being disenfranchised by the candidate themselves, but the ability for people to go and what we would call ballot harvest, which basically means going and getting a bunch of votes, whether those are in urban communities, whether those are in nursing homes, all of that, the ground game is quite important. And then the counting game becomes very delayed and manipulable. And that is, again, ripe for abuse, but it's also ripe for the population to be quite distrusting of their of the outcomes or of the sanctity of their vote. And I think that was all a product of COVID and scaring people and changing the way people vote to make it easier for these things to happen. In the past, absentee voting or voting before the day of election, that was mainly done for people that could not get to the voting box or get to the polls because they were immobile or infirmed. Or it was for people who actually attested that they would not be present in the state near a polling place on that vote date. So again, absentee voting in the past required you to state that you had those things, basically by law say, I'm not going to be here. I couldn't sit here and say, well, I'm going to absentee vote even though I'm in town. Technically, that was illegal, or it was breaking the law in a sense. I'm not sure anybody ever got, in trouble for it. But,
what has been done differently? 2 years ago, we had fraudulent activities that were well documented, millions of them, actually. And nothing was done about it. And it looks like if the Republicans don't want to win and fight with integrity, and then, okay, we'll just keep playing these games. Unfortunately, for example, in Alabama, we have this vile, sorry, sad man, John Merrill, who is now no longer he won't be, come January, the Secretary of State in charge of elections in our state. But he was allowed to walk up the chain of authority and power in our Republican Party in Alabama, and they let him do it. And sure enough, many shenanigans. Mike Lindell, the pillow, my pillow guy, has a suit that's pending, waiting on the Supreme Court. And it's amazing. It doesn't matter if it's red or blue states, that the fraud and deception is allowed to be continued. And nobody seems to hold them account. In the Republican Party, the grand old party, thinks that we'll just keep it going, keep it low, keep it on the down low, as they say, for whatever reason. But it's clearly not for the benefit of the people of our state. And the old machine, it doesn't matter what state, the Republican or Democratic Party, seems to, the machines of both parties operate to benefit them, not the citizens of the state. And it's more and more and more evident when they do not value. Remember that I've, for my entire lifetime, I've always heard the phrase, one man, one vote. That one person counts for one vote. Well, if you get to vote twice, my vote counts half yours. That's not one man, one vote. And it is evil. It is a part of the system that both parties have been allowed to that have allowed to go on to the detriment of us all. But the people in charge, the Pharisees, scribes, and lawyers, those that determine, write, and implement the bills to benefit themselves, the people that Jesus continuously warned, they need to repent. And that's always the answer, as we've been saying for over 2 years now.
And I think this is true. It doesn't really matter. I mean, California right now has, California is supposedly the bastion of tech, right? Not that I would think the tech machines for voting are great, but I mean, they as of Friday, they still had 5 million votes they had not counted. Okay. So again, and some of these congressional races don't even have half the votes counted. It baffles my mind that in our country, which is supposedly the bastion of democracy, even though we are a democratic, a constitutional republic, but in where the democracy, where we vote for our representatives, that we can't have a count at least completed within 24 hours is really a testament to that. First of all, your state politicians don't really care. Your state Secretary of State doesn't really care. And over time, as much as they would like to push Trump as the reason that people don't trust elections, I would argue that the way elections are run and the fact that we don't get outcomes like in states like Florida, where within a couple hours of voting, everything's done, as well as they, you tag your vote, you follow your vote online. They basically kind of reformed their system after the 2000 debacle with the hanging chads or pregnant chads. But that, I think, is more of the reason why people are mistrusting the voting system, is the voting system itself seems to be unreliable. I mean, again, imagine that. I think somebody was giving me this argument the other day. It's like, imagine the Alabama-Auburn game. They just turned off the scoreboard and the time and just said, hey, can we continue to play, guys? And then at the end, they told us who won. I'm pretty sure the state would be pretty pissed and say, look, we're not going to put up with that, and fix it really quick. They'd get that timer back on. They'd get the score back on. We wouldn't just sit there and watch them play and then at the end go, oh, well, Alabama won, obviously. Look at the scoreboard. So
yeah. Yeah, it's that's a good analogy, because that's what's going on. And the Republican establishment is just as guilty as the Democratic establishment, in my book, because they allow all this without raising the stink. And then they promote some guy like John Merrill in Alabama. What a sad guy. You know, John Merrill, our illustrious liberal Republican Secretary of State, now that he is termed out, he is now a voice for the CCP in promoting commerce for the Chinese Communist Party. That's going to be his next gig. What a sad fool. But this is just all indications of the headwinds we've got to go against in order to promote the truth.
It goes back to, again, it doesn't matter the party. The people in power like it when the system is less than transparent, because the opacity makes it easier for them when there's a toss-up. It's easier for them to win out and go in their favor. I mean, they like it to be. It's like the old example that I always give. The reason laws are so hard to read is because half the people that write them are lawyers, and they need to be paid $500 an hour after they leave to interpret them.
Right.
You know, if we actually made laws easy to understand, maybe the whole professional class of lawyers might not have as much work to do.
So, yeah. And Ben Franklin was supposedly the guy that said, you get a representative republic if you can keep it. And what is in the indication was is, if we are an honorable people, then we'll be able to maintain the system. And the brilliance of our U.S. Constitution is its brevity. And the more people that you have that are unscrupulous, liars, fraudulent, the more words are needed in order to keep things above board, or in their case, keep things below the table. But the fact is, we should expect more and more words from more and more lawyers who are unwilling to challenge the stupid. And our culture, once again, the answer is repentance. But we need to be hopeful, obviously, that if the Lord intervenes and the truth is allowed to be revealed, that we have the answers. And the answers are based in reality and truth. By the way, the definition of truth is that which is consistent with reality. That which is consistent with reality. And apparently our world that we're stuck in right now doesn't value truth. And so our goal is to promote it. We're obligated to promoting it. And that's the goal of America Out Loud Pulse, with these other wonderful speakers. By the way, yes, this weekend I listened to several different speakers on our platform here. And yeah, I'm so blessed, and we're honored to be a part of the group that has done so much good work in the last year. But it's very unfortunate that the truth is not allowed to be exposed, because the people in charge fraudulently maintain their power with lies and deceptions.
We will be back.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.5 proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to healthycell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. Healthycell.com. Code OUTLOUD. That's healthycell.com. Code out loud.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Back to ConcernedDoctors.org's Dr. Jordan Vaughn, and I am Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse. And today we've talked about the absurdity of their plans, whether it is with the recent masks rule or article that is going to give them another push to tyrannically injure our children, especially, and those that have respiratory problems with compromised immune systems. These masks that we've known since the 1940s do not work against this type of infectious agent. Yet they come out with another fraudulent study again, and we went over the few of the details about how fraudulent it was. And then we also are going to look at, we've looked at so many of the failures. One of the ones we're going to look at now, and I think this is a major way for everybody to take a step back and to see the evidence of their failed policies and what they've done to us, is if you look at the excess deaths. The excess deaths in the world are astronomical. And with that, I'm going to invite Jordan back. Thank you again for joining us. Jordan, what's your take on where we're sitting after the ridiculous elections and the mask article?
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, I think as a kind of a leisure economist, somebody who loves economics, loves to read it in his spare time, Thomas Sowell, his books in the past have always taught me that even with the intentions of the what I would call elite or intentions of those that are writing laws, very few of them, usually actually none of them, think beyond the first outcome of whatever they are dictating. And the problem with that is most of life is much more complex than A-B. Usually A-B results in an alphabet of outcomes. And most every one of those letters are never even predicted, nor even, counted to begin with. And I think one of the things that you're talking about when you talk about excess deaths is, well, excess deaths isn't even in their quantification. It wasn't even in their understanding of the original rollout of the vaccine that there might be. Heck, I think even then, even to this day, they won't even admit there's even one death. I think for the most part, they openly say that it is 100% safe and effective. And again, that is ridiculous. So even with any vaccine rollout, there's going to be consequences. And most of those consequences are better to be planned than they are to be covered up. And I think they're also, when we talk about people's trust in the system, it's the trust when people tell you that there might be a bad outcome. Similar to as physicians, a lot of times when we do a procedure or talk about a therapy, what do we go through with the patient, Stuart?
Yeah, we go through the informed consent and what are the potential downsides thing.
Yeah, so there's downsides to every intervention, correct, Stuart? Outside of outside of the Lord's intervention in regards to our salvation. I'm unaware of any other downside.
Right.
You meaning on that, but every other thing we do, there is a secondary effect. Now, that secondary effect might be minuscule, but it still exists, correct?
Amen.
So I think that by itself is one of the things that is the most worrisome about this whole rollout. And it's pretty obvious, as the vaccine itself didn't prevent infection, didn't prevent transmission, even though they said it did. As they pick up the pieces where they have to admit that it doesn't do that, it's pretty apparent that they didn't plan on something that they, at least at that point, should have easily known.
Yeah. And it's clear that they're not safe and effective. Just ask our president, the head of the CDC, Anthony Fauci, and the likes about how ineffective they are at preventing transmission and being infectious. It's just one lie after another after another. And I think, like I was mentioning, the excess deaths, I don't think you can get, and it's clear that that's due to the dangers of what they call the vaccine. And excess deaths, I think, is the largest metric you can overall look at. And even now, in the very, very short term, and here we are a year and a half, almost 2 years after the very first ones were given out, we're having excess deaths that are just stacking up in historic, awful ways. And a couple of weeks ago, there was an assessment.
Stuart, we know, or I will say we assume we know, what the cause of that is. I don't even care if the cause that we are saying is wrong. The excess deaths exist, and they don't have an answer for them. That in itself is a problem.
Yeah. Well, you and I know what we have the evidence, the scientific. We can say this with certitude, not with just guessing. But we have scientific, reasonable, hard evidence that it is the spike protein that these people have been playing around with.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there's not even a competing narrative.
Oh, right, right.
The narrative's not even existent. Excess deaths don't even register.
Yeah, and so let's just look briefly at the numbers. In the spring of 20, the excess deaths in the UK were under 200. So the excess deaths at the beginning of the awful thing were under 200. Excess deaths, not the number of deaths, because there were a lot of deaths, but the excess deaths were not that tremendous, because it was that of the elderly, as we remember, still is. But then, and so when you have all these very old people, the excess that are dying, they were close.
And by the way, Stuart, I guess let's talk about excess deaths. So excess deaths in themselves, what they mean is that if we were to sit down and predict how many people were to die in the state of Alabama this year versus last year, we would have some variables. Those variables would be population increase, population age change, a lot of different things. But we would be able to fairly, you know, within probably less than 0.5%, predict what probably the funeral homes and casket makers need to plan on.
Right, but that's a good point. This number that we're looking at is excess deaths per week over compared to the last 5 years.
Exactly.
Over the last 5 years, we're looking at what the excess deaths are. And we have 90% fewer deaths from COVID than we did at the peaks. Now, so Omicron, thank the Lord, is not as deadly.
So there's some other variable.
Yes,
is exactly what you're suggesting, Stuart.
Well, the evidence is showing that. And so,
I'm saying is even to at least the public health official, they have to hopefully be searching for a variable.
Right.
Because they can't ignore the excess deaths. Or they can, evidently. But
so for the week, in one of the middle weeks of October, just a month ago, there was a 15.7% increase above the average in the UK, in the entire UK. This is not inconsistent with other, I've seen up to 22%. But I'm looking at the hard numbers right now. There was a 15.7% increase excess deaths just a month ago in the UK. This is happening repeatedly throughout the world, and it's happening more and more and more in the countries that have the highest vaccination. Israel has a huge number. All right, so what I'm going to is, this is an easy metric for anybody to honestly assess. How did we, 3 weeks going on 3 years now into this, and actually we knew that this popped out in Wuhan in August of 19. Anyways, so here we are 3 years later. Why are we not holding anybody to account? And clearly to me, unless you want to touch on the excess deaths, Jordan, do you want to talk on that before I go into the next, which we talked about?
No, well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. There's no CNN countdown of excess deaths. But when you actually look at the sum in totality, it's, I mean, the amount of carnage is pretty striking.
It's historic, no doubt. And so how did we get into this position? And I would say, having served in the military, is there was no planning section. Every commander has a planning section. And the planners are the people that help you try and see around the corner, that help you see about potential threats that are looming. And they always not only are looking in the future, but they're evaluating what they've done and their assessments are in the past so that they can be more right, because nobody's going to be perfect. But it has been clear, and this has been very frustrating for me and others, for the last 3 years. From the beginning, the agenda, the narrative, has been driven by the people that are making the decisions, and there is no planning section because they haven't been held to account. They haven't been expected to help us see around the corner because they obviously, from the get-go, have had an agenda, and they have been staying steadily on course with that agenda, no matter what happens. From a logical point of view, you would think that in the middle of a fight, in the middle of a real challenge like this, that you would have people making adjustments and things.
Especially in science.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right. You should have a good scientist would assess adverse outcomes.
Yeah.
Meaning, okay, I have this treatment, this therapy. I mean, a good example would even the triple therapy that I'm doing. One of the things I keep up with is how many people have a bleed. I mean, to me, mm-hmm. that's important because that is a risk. That's a known risk. Well, how often does it happen? The reality is we don't even have assessment. Heck, I think the Israeli team recently, when they presented the VAERS data that they thought they were keeping up with, but they weren't.
Right.
And they just started keeping up with the negative consequences of the vaccine January of 2022. When they presented the data in June of 2022, the Ministry of Health did not want to hear it. It actually took a leak of the Zoom call for that to be heard. And guess what? The Ministry of Health person presented a very different view of that. So all of a sudden you call in the cavalry and say, hey, we need to keep an eye on this. And when what is kept an eye on is inconvenient, it's just easier to shut them up.
That's right. And that's what they did. And that's what they continue to do. So the whole point is there has been obviously no planning section. And what happened less than 3 months ago when the CDC director, Walensky, was called to the carpet for her and their abject failures. Once again, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, they have failed. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, they have failed on both accounts. They have not controlled nor prevented this disease. Kind of like
She just got back from 3 weeks of leave from recovering from her triple boosted whatever, plus Paxlovid times plus, two.
Right.
You know, I'm not really, you know, again, if that, I guess the only point she needs to make probably and said, well, actually, we need to give people 3 weeks off because that's how long it took me to get better from this.
Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't encapsulate all of this, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention director, gets not one, not two boosters. She had three boosters. So five shots.
A brand new bivalent booster.
Yeah. And she gets her Paxlovid and still takes her 3 weeks. So that epitomizes their failures better than even her statements 3 months ago. Which
back at the original, before we had any of these treatments or vaccines, most people cleared it in 5 days.
And this is the Omicron.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunately, you and I know we're not surprised by her having a problem with this after after all these jabs that are weakening her immune system. Very unfortunate that she won't follow the science. But the whole point is the narrative has been, like with the CDC playbook that came out to the working groups for the vaccine rollout, the goal here is narrative, narrative, narrative. The doctors are not going to be included. Public health people will, but not the practicing physicians. They will not be included in the dialogue and into the discussions and determinations as to what to do about the vaccine rollout.
And in fact, the White House will mandate.
That's right.
They get ejected.
And if a doctor does interject, then like in California, you can have your license, or with Dr. McCullough, you can get your license revoked. The insanity is absurd, but it is so patently the truth of it cannot be denied. And once we have been saying this from day one, we invite any other expert in Alabama that wants to talk to us and come on our podcast, and we will record it and dialogue, or we can get world experts to come on. Jordan, I know you are one of the leaders in the triple therapy, but we'll get McCullough or Malone or one of these Steve Kirsch to look at the numbers and debate. Once again, we will make that happen. If you're willing to, please, we want to open up dialogue so people can begin, so we can start repairing the broken damage these people have caused to our profession, the reputation of our profession. The sooner this happens, the better.
And I will close with a quote from Lord Sumption, who actually was quoted in one of the articles that I like from Matthew Crawford, who's on Unheard. But he says, when you depend for your basic freedoms on convention rather than law, once the convention is broken, the spell is broken. Once you get to a position where it is unthinkable to lock people up nationally, except when somebody thinks it's a good idea, then frankly, there is no longer any barrier at all. We have crossed that threshold, and governments do not forget these things. I think this is a model that will come to be accepted if we are not very careful, as a way of dealing with all manner of collective problems. So again, that sums up the worry and the reason that laws exist, and that why sometimes they may appear to be inconvenient laws because somebody thinks breaking them or overwhelming them is a good idea. But in the end, when your basic freedoms are conventions that one individual, whether that individual is an expert or not, can decide that those freedoms no longer exist, that's when the spell is broken. And I think that's the problem in a lot of these civilized countries, at least in states like California. The spell of where the law matters is broken. We need to get it fixed.
Amen. And it's a good conclusion, because they have had their day in court and beyond. Hopefully we will have many more. But the sooner this is addressed, and the sooner the integrity of our profession has been sought, and we begin repairing the breaks that they have caused and done, and the death and injuries they have caused, the sooner the better we will all be.
So we will see you next week. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley on America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.